Welcome to our paranormal afterlife. This is our paranormal afterlife, and I'm your host, Simon Bowne. This week I'm talking to Nicole Powell about her book, The Power, A Call to Mediumship. Nicole Powell is a spiritual medium and reverend. She leads spiritualist services, does readings, runs circles and leads workshops. She is the minister at Two Worlds Spiritualist Centre in Nanaimo, Vancouver Island. And you can enjoy the extended version of this episode ad-free on Patreon. Hi Nicole, thanks a lot for coming on the podcast.
Thank you so much, Simon. I am thrilled to be here.
So we're going to talk about your book. It's called The Power, A Call to Mediumship. So first of all, I've got to ask, what is the power?
The power is that infinite source within you that moves you, shakes you, and transforms your life. And some people could call that the God frequency. And sometimes, you know, just the power just describes it enough as that infinite force that moves through you.
It's something that you have to connect to do the mediumship. It's like, it's not with you 24 hours a day, is it? Is it kind of like going into a meditation and connecting with it?
Yes, absolutely. You know, there's a huge misconception around mediumship because people see what's on TV, right? So they think mediums are 24/7, dialed in, connected, seeing spirits around people, constantly, you know, being bombarded or giving people messages in the grocery store. And there couldn't be something farther from the truth. Because I say, if you're going to work as a medium, respect the power that you're working with. And know when you're in the power and when that flow is moving through you. Because when you can connect to that and hold that infinitely in that source, that's when you're a clean channel and it's just like flowing through you. Like, you know, when you see a medium and it's like they are just flowing, channeling information, you know that they're in the power. And when someone is kind of like glitchy, kind of in, kind of out, and, you know, using the word think or I don't know, or it could be, you know, they're not fully in that power source. And so as mediums, we have to learn how to hold the power, be in the power, to be that clean channel in order for the information to be accurate and just flowing.
Yeah, because I saw in your book, you say, the more you try to get something from spirit, the more it's blocked. And the more you let go, the more it can flow. And it's like, you've got to get out of your own way.
Absolutely. Because the mind is not where mediumship is. People think that if they think, then they concentrate, they'll get information. Well, you have to get out of your head in order to be really in the flow, right? It's that let go, let God kind of philosophy. But with mediumship, it's about moving out of the way so spirit can move through. And your voice is just channeling information so that it can give to the recipient. So yes, it's all about that. Get out of the way. And that's a process, right? Like, it's not easy to just say, oh, just get out of the way and then you can be a medium. It's like that can take years of development to be able to let go enough, because that's the death of the ego.
And the way the information comes to you, I think, is it that it's kind of symbolic and metaphorical? And because I think there's a lot of people who think a medium, you're sitting there and you can just hear someone talking and it's just a conversation. But it doesn't work like that, does it?
No, I say that to my clients. I'm like, just so you know, your loved one isn't standing in front of you telling me what to say. I'm like, I'm sitting here and I'm getting rushes of energy, impressions, flashes of color, of imagery. I'm hearing broken words in my head. And I am just trusting as it's coming through me, because it's a living language. It's in the moment that I am doing it justice of communicating what is being said as I'm seeing it or feeling it or hearing it or knowing it as it's flowing through me. So a medium, you know, it's kind of old school to say, oh, I'm a clairvoyant or I'm a clairaudient, meaning I only hear or I only see. Because if you want to be a medium, all your faculties have to be open. Because like I said, it's almost holographic or it's a living language. So you have to be open on all your receptors to be able to communicate accurately and more four-dimensionally too.
Four-dimensionally.
You know, it's almost like if I just said, oh, I see a man's face and he's got brown hair. I mean, that's not really, you know, it's not deep enough. It's like, oh, I got a man here and I feel his heart is full of love for you. But I know that you had a disconnect before he passed. And I feel that there's something left unsaid. And he's telling me to, you know, I mean, that's a, you're kind of getting more deeper into, you're moving into the spirit, opposed to just keeping it flat with imagery describing it.
So could we go back to the beginning? How did it all start for you?
As a child, I was pretty sensitive and I was more into, like, you know, witchcraft and playing around with energy and, you know, the earth elements in my backyard. I didn't have any spirit friends and I wasn't seeing spirit or anything like that. But I was always kind of just a little bit different and always very interested in something, you know, more. But I grew up in a household where we didn't practice religion and nor was it invited into our house. And my father really wanted us to have our own experience with whatever that was without any preconceived notions and religion influencing us. So that, you know, I thank him now, but at the time that frustrated me because I was very interested in what my friends were doing at church and stuff like that. But when I was 19, my soul sister, best friend, passed away and it gutted me. I just didn't know what to think or what to believe. And I searched everywhere for a higher meaning or something that had to be out there. And I got into a lot of James Van Praagh's books, Sylvia Brown. I was just absorbing information, even though it was probably over my head at 19 at that time. But I had a visitation from her where she came to see me in my sleep and I shooed her away because I didn't think it was actually her. And she promised me that it was and that she would show me. And so she pushed me off my bed and in real life, I landed on the floor and woke up and realized that there was more to that being a dream, but more of a visitation, which was her actually coming to see me. Well, over the period of a few weeks, she continued to come to see me and she would take my hand and take me to the other side to show me where she was, to tour me around, and to also go to our favorite places, like a meeting place. We had this cliff in Ireland we would go to and we'd watch the waves of the ocean coming in. And I believe that that was my first awakening into mediumship and something more. Because after that, when my grandmother passed away, on my dad's side, I too had a dream of her to let me know that she was there with me and that she was okay. And things like that would just started to happen and it started to feel normal. But when I was 22, I had an experience where my appendix burst and I was in emergency, I believe for like the fifth or sixth time in that 2 week period. I was very, very ill and I knew that I wasn't going to make it. I was starting to have visions where I was leaving my body. I was coming in and out of consciousness. But for whatever reason, I wasn't getting proper medical care. And it was almost like everyone was in a trance looking through me and not really seeing that I needed help, right? So on this final time going to emergency, you know, they already had like a form that was kind of like, this woman just keeps coming back, you know, just don't take her too seriously. And I remember laying there in emergency and this spirit came to visit me and it was this eminescent bright light. And I remember just being like, please, please don't take me. I don't want to go with you. Like, not now, not this time. And she said to me, if you stay, you're going to have to do this work. And I had no idea what this work meant, but I was game. I was like, sure, absolutely. I'll do this work, whatever it is. And she says, okay, we'll show you. And I ended up getting my appendix out and having multiple surgeries because I had to have different processes going on. And I was very sick for, I'd say about 9 months and just not myself after that. And I feel like this is quite common for people who have these near-death experiences. Like they come back and it's almost like they're different. They feel empty. They don't know who they are anymore. It's almost like I couldn't relate to my friendship, my career. I just felt like a hollow vessel. And I was looking for something else and something more and to figure out what the heck this work was that I was supposed to do. And so My girlfriend, who was my boss at the time, she told me to go see a healer. And I liked that idea. So I went to one and I also went for a tarot reading. And through those two experiences, everything just started to click into place. And it was like someone hit the ignition button and all of a sudden I started to move forward. And then I signed up for a 3-year program studying energy healing. And that was in Vancouver. And all of a sudden, everything started to crack open a little bit at a time. And I believe those 3-4 years of, you know, receiving a healing, getting tarot reading, learning energy work, and then starting to practice it, I really started to just blow open. And so I was in my 20s when I started practicing tarot readings and energy healings and also intuitive healing too. But when I was 29, I went to a spiritualist church just to check it out because my grandmother had passed, my other grandmother, and I was curious if I would receive a message. And as I was sitting in that spiritualist church, I saw the medium connecting with people and I could see spirits all around the room. I knew exactly who she was connecting to, what she was going to say to them. And it was almost like I was connected to the medium and also seeing all these people that wanted readings and their loved ones standing behind them. And through my experience of being a healer first, an intuitive, a tarot reader, I believe that that was my foundation and opening without me even knowing that that was my direction. So when I went home that night from the spiritualist church, I told my husband, who was my boyfriend at the time, that I had this experience and that I wanted to see if I could do it. And I said, if I'm legit, you know, then we know I'm actually a medium. And he's British and I'm Canadian. And I feel like in England, maybe you guys knew more about spiritualism. You understand more about evidence. That was just my experience because he seemed to know more about mediumship than I did. So I gave him a reading and I brought through his grandfather. And I said to him, you know, he's talking about this box of books collecting dust in the basement. And he had no idea what I meant and was like, well, maybe, I don't know. I mean, he wrote a book, but we didn't really sell many copies. And it was about the war and stuff like that. And I ended the reading because I couldn't hold the power for very long. But the few pieces I brought through, he did say were legit. But because I was his girlfriend, he didn't know where, if I got that information from, you know, a book or if I was actually just getting the information. Well, the next morning when his mom called from England and said that she was talking to her uncle, well, his uncle, and he had a box of your grandfather's books sitting in the basement, word for word what I said the day before, he was like, okay, Nicole, like, you're legit. Like, you actually got something here. So when that light bulb went on, that I actually was a medium and I could bring through accurate information, I was like, full-fledged, like I'm ready to just dive in with 2 feet and learn absolutely everything I possibly can about mediumship. And that started me off going to the spiritualist church, joining a circle, receiving information and readings, and then taking me over to England and studying at the Arthur Findlay College. And I already had a business as a tarot reader and a healer. So the mediumship just started to naturally integrate in. And it just started taking over my life. And that was, well, I'm 39 now, and that started when I was 29 going full-time. So it's been about 10 years of, you know, full-time work, working as a medium and intuitive. And so that's kind of how it got started.
And when that phone call came from England about the grandfather's book, How did you feel? Did you get a feeling of, holy moly, I was right? Or were you more confident than that?
I knew. It's funny because in every other area of my life, I'm not necessarily that confident. You know, I didn't do well in school. I got a lot of C's. And when it came to communicating with the non-physical world and working with energy, no one could doubt me on it. It was like a knowing. And so when he said that, I was like, yeah, see, I told you. Like, this is evidential. Sure. Awesome. Because if I can make this more real for people instead of just telling them my experience, then this was game. Like, game on, let's do this. Like, let's show people there really is an afterlife if I can start bringing through accurate information from the other side.
And I wanted to ask you about your friend Mary and what happened there that night. Because was it that you dreamt it and then you were kind of thrown out of your bed?
So I was falling asleep. So I call that the theta state, when you go more into that lucid dreaming where you're not quite asleep, but you're still kind of awake. That's when she came to me, and it was almost like I was shifting brainwaves at the moment that she came. And at first it just started with a vision of her standing in front of me. And she said, "Hey, I'm here." And I was like, "Oh no, 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 no. I can't do this. Like, you died. This is too painful. I can't play." Right. And she started shaking me and she said, "No, it's really me." And I said, "No, like, Mary, just go. Like, this is too hard to lose you. I don't want to do this in my dreams." And she said, "What do I have to do to prove to you that it's really me?" And I remember just rolling over, like, "Go away." And so she said, "Okay, fine." And she took the sheets underneath me and reefed them so that I would roll right off the bed and hit the ground. And when I hit the floor, it was very obvious that something had happened, because never in my life had I fallen off my bed before. I had a queen size bed, right? And I remember my mom came running in the room, because it was about 12:30 at night, and she said, what happened? And I said, "Mom, it was Mary, and she was here, and she pushed me off the bed." And she just looked at me and she says, "We'll believe it." And I feel, because of the confidence that my mom had of my experience, it almost made it more real for me that I wasn't just making it up. And the fact that it was reoccurring for many weeks after that until I was okay. And then once I felt like I had a plan and I knew who I was and I was going to be all right, that's when the visitation stopped. But she's never left me. And it's funny, almost anybody who's read my book, the pieces about Mary seem to stand out the most. And I just have to mention her, and, you know, full wave of goosebumps just come over me.
Yeah, there was something I was interested in when you were talking about one of the dreams. And I think you said something like you went to the shopping mall together and you were looking at clothes that were going to come out later on Earth. It's almost like you had future insight.
Yeah, I mean, we were huge into shopping. That was our thing. Every weekend after school, we'd go shopping. We'd go downtown and spend hours looking at clothes. And so in those visitations, when she'd take me to the other side, she'd take us shopping. And yeah, we would see clothes of the future and what was coming out in style. So it was kind of neat, because she was showing me just how timeless it really is, and just how a shift of awareness took me into that heaven state. And it was no big deal. It was just there.
Wasn't there a medium? Is it Pam Molt, who later confirmed what happened with Mary?
So when I started going to the spiritualist more regularly, I think I only went like twice before I got, you know, I went to one of those psychic fairs and I booked a reading, and I'd never met Pam Molt before. And I sat down to have a reading with her. And the first thing she said when she looked at me, before she even had a chance to dive into the reading, and these were only 20-minute slots, was that she wanted to invite me into her mediumship circle. And I, you know, sure, awesome, let's do it. When do we start, kind of thing. So the fact that she picked up on that, I was like, okay, I'm not even having to try here. It's just coming to me. And the second thing is, she brought through Mary. And when she brought through Mary, I went through like an entire box of Kleenex in that 20 minutes. I was sobbing, and I had never had a sit down evidential mediumship reading before. And so that I had no idea how transformative, how healing that experience would be. And in ways that I never saw coming, that grief therapists or anybody could never have done for me. But she confirmed that Mary used to come visit to me in my sleep, and she would take me to the other side. And having her say that and even describe some of the scenes of the ocean and on cliffs was just like, wow, this is making it that much more real. Like, it wasn't just me having these experiences. She's actually confirming it through a medium having these experiences.
And there's something else I want to go back to there with the experience there that you had with the bed, is that you said that you were in that state where you're just before you're falling asleep. It was like theta waves. Is that the same kind of condition, state? I don't know the word, that you get into when you're doing mediumship, that it's like you go into that same theta wave state.
Yeah, you definitely shift brain waves, because when I'm going grocery shopping or getting, you know, gas at the gas station or, you know, doing my taxes, I'm in my thinking mind. There is absolutely no mediumship going on there. But when I start to work, I start to drift my awareness, right? It's almost like I start to shift and it becomes timeless. Like, I don't feel if I'm hot or cold. I have no physical pain. All of a sudden I'm in this dream state and my eyes are open, but I'm like staring through somebody. And that's the state when I'm really in the flow of mediumship where the information starts dialing through.
Since you were in that position, that near-death experience where there was like a spirit saying to you, okay, if you go back, you got to do this work.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any kind of thing where the spirits are helping you? It's almost like you could say to them, well, you sent me back. You got to help me out.
And it took a while. Like I said, it took about 9 months before I had a reading and a healing to start to feel that ignition that I'm on the right track. And in those months, I was a hot mess. Like, I didn't know who I was, nothing. And I was trying to become vegan because I couldn't eat anything. I was, you know, going gluten-free, dairy-free. I was searching. I was trying to heal my body. But what was missing was the spiritual component. Once I added that in to the mind-body, then the spiritual component put me on this path and I couldn't get it wrong. You know what I mean? It was like the floor was moving beneath me and going, you need to meet this person. You need to meet this person. Sign up for this. And it was just happening all at once. And I was just like, yes, this is it. I'm on track. I feel it. I know it. And everything just came together so quickly. And I love that about it, because sometimes when you are just wandering around aimlessly going, am I on the right track? It feels empty, right? But I feel when you add in that spiritual component, it's almost like I just needed to invite them. And then things could start to move. And I believe they were honestly just waiting for me. I was just looking in all the wrong places. I was thinking maybe I should become a nurse, or, you know, I should, you know, become a healthcare practitioner. Like, I was completely in my head about it.
So it's almost like they're, I don't know, like a parent would look at a child and say, we've got to give them space so they can find their own way to this.
Totally. And I didn't know that you could just call in your guides. Like, if I knew that at 22, when this was happening to me, I would have done it right away. But I didn't. I thought, oh, I have to figure this out. And so I was in my thinking mind. And yeah, it was like they were just waiting, going, okay, let's give her some time, let her figure this out. But when she hits this, then we'll step in and we will guide her life. And from that moment of when I started having a reading or going for healing or, you know, starting to train as a healer, I've never been, you know, left since. It's just been 16 years, full-fledged, fast pace, on the fast line, continuously going. And I couldn't imagine living life any other way. And to be honest, there's nothing else that I feel called to do, because I go, if I'm not doing this, then what's the point in being here? I already made a deal, right?
When you're doing the energy healing, do you get the sense that there's like a spirit healer working with you?
I feel like depending on who I'm doing a healing on, the spirits change. Do you know what I mean? It's like sometimes it's a collective consciousness. Sometimes it's the angelic realm. Sometimes, you know, I shift into this, like, you know, shamanic healer. And sometimes it feels like spirit doctors are working with me. But I'm so fluid with it. I'm not attached to who they are, because I know that I'm connected to the light and a higher source. And what is needed for each person will shift to make it possible and available to me in that moment, if that makes sense.
So with the energy healing, when somebody was giving you the healing, I think you said in the book that you were put right back into your body and the excess energy was swept off.
Oh, yeah. That first healing, I don't think I was descriptive enough in the book. So what happened was, is this woman came over to my house and gave me healing. I'd never had it before. She lied me down on a massage table And from the moment it started, something was transforming. And I opened my eyes because I was like, whoa, what's going on here? And I saw the room filled with gold fractals. It was like little shards of glass all over the room. And it was like I was inside a matrix and I was about 2 feet up off the ground, off my body. You know, my physical body was on the massage table, but my spirit body was about 2 feet in the air. And I remember even looking down and being like, does she know that I'm in the air right now? And I started to see as she was working with the energy that these fractals were starting to come back to me. And it was like I had such a traumatic crisis through the process of being unheard, being in physical pain, and then having to go through various surgeries, that it was like I left my body and it was too painful to be in it. And that's why I looked like just an empty, sick vessel. But when my spirit started to return to my vessel, everything started to transform. But for whatever reason, it was like an initiation, an activation point where I was physically able to see what happened. Now, never in my 16 years has that ever happened again. I've never seen anything like that in my experiences since. But that day, at that moment, it was very, very profound and like I was in the matrix.
And it kind of put you on path. It was like, oh, you were a bit, I don't know how to say it. It sounds a bit horrible. So you were a bit of a mess and they cleaned up the mess.
They cleaned up the mess. It was like, take this fractal, put it back in your body. Take this fractal, put it back in your body. You know, I think in healing terms, you'd call this a soul retrieval. In shamanism, they'd call it that, where your fractals of your old self come back to you through a traumatic experience. And that's exactly what was happening. And as all those shards came back to me, those gold bits, I started to land on the table and I started to feel myself. It was like someone was breathing life back into me again. And you see that in movies when it's like, you know, they die and then they breathe life into them and all of a sudden they got color again. It was that transformative. And I remember thinking like energy healing, this can do this to me. Like, wow, like sign me up. Where can I learn how to do this? I need to become a master in this because this literally just saved my life and changed my life in an instant.
So there's a part of the book that's called You Need to Believe It to See It.
Yeah.
Which is the opposite of what people say is like, oh, well, I'll believe it when I see it. But it's kind of like you're saying, no, you're not going to see it unless you believe it's a possibility.
Absolutely. So when I do readings for people who just want proof and have no belief, it's like sometimes it feels like I'm giving them information and it's bouncing back off of them again. You know what I mean? And it's like I'm trying to give information through a tiny squeezed straw. And it's almost like it can't get in. And they're in their head going, until they say that, you know, I have my father's coin collection, I'm not going to believe a word that's coming out of her mouth. And so they miss the miracle of what's actually happening and they cannot believe it. So they discredit it. They become cynical, negative. And that's, as you know, that's a very low frequency. And it's hard to get information going when you're bouncing that kind of frequency off somebody. So a lot of the time it feels like a waste of time, to be honest. But if you get someone who just has that little belief that, you know, something's happened to them before, or they're dying to believe it's real, or they're just open enough to have an experience, that's all it takes to transform someone's life. And so a lot of it has to do too with the client or the sitter of them being out of their head as well to have a transformative experience. Because cynicism, it's not healthy and nobody wants to be around someone that's always negative. But healthy skepticism, that's where it's at, because it's saying I'm willing to listen, but I'm not going to believe every word that comes out of your mouth. Like I need some evidence with that. Do you know what I mean? And that makes it more believable and real.
Yeah. It's not that thing where they're just too much of a believer and they just believe everything you say.
Those clients are exhausting too, because they take over, right? And you don't even have to say anything. They go, oh, my God, I have to tell you this story and blah, 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 blah. And it's like, they're so open. They believe everything. And it's almost like it's not fun. It's like, it doesn't end up being a full reading, but it's almost like got to meet in that middle ground.
Hello, Simon here. I conduct past life regression therapy sessions over Zoom, and these sessions can be very insightful and healing. If you go to my website, pastliveshypnosis.co.uk, you can book a free 20-minute consultation where we can discuss what it is you would like to achieve. You'll find the link to my website in the show notes. And you also talk about code words, and this is linked to this. It's like you're saying some people might be at home and they say, okay, Uncle John, if you're going to come through, you've got to say the word strawberry. If I don't hear strawberry from the medium, then I know it's not happening. It's not real.
I can tell you a personal story when this drove me mad. I was doing a session for this man, and he came in, and immediately his family member showed up. It was a brother. And I started bringing through information, and he was very clear. His brother was with me in communicating. Like, I was in the flow, I was going. But then he crosses his eyes and he furls his brow and he says, I don't care what you say until you tell me the code word of the animal. I'm not listening to a word. And I just looked at him. I said, could you just please just stay open to the experience? I don't take demands. I just, you know, I give you what you need, but not what you want, if that makes sense. And he just kind of stayed quiet with his brow furrowed. And from that point, it's like he couldn't hear me. Anything I said, he was discrediting. Anything I said, it wasn't good enough. And then he would talk back to me and go, oh, well, that would be anybody, or that could be anything. And what that does is it drops the reading. It's almost like spirit goes, okay, this isn't working. And I'm frustrated. So I'm in my head and it's not working anymore. And it's almost like you just have to shut down the reading, right? And so those things about when you say, I want this and I want proof and I want it to look like that. I mean, how does that work in life when we demand the universe and say, I don't want any of this until you give me what I want? It's almost like you just create blockages for yourself, right? So that's the same in mediumship.
And I think you also say that if you want that code word, don't just... Yeah. Focus that it has to come through the medium, because your loved one might give you that code word some other way.
Absolutely. And you know, the people that don't have those expectations usually end up getting it because they're not focused on it, right? And you're right, like that, for instance, that person, he could have seen that animal or saw a photo of that animal, and that could have been confirmation alone that his loved one was with him. But this all came from a Netflix documentary series called Surviving Death, where the person making the documentary told people that they needed code words. And then everyone started coming for readings and bringing code words. And I'd have to explain to them, like, could you check your code word at the door? Let me just do the reading. And if the code word comes, great. If not, you know, let it go. And it's things like that with television where they create expectations. And it doesn't always work out. And if anything, it just creates a frustration for the person receiving the reading of thinking that they're doing what they're supposed to, when really their only job is to let go and open their heart.
So when you have someone come in who hasn't sat with you before, do you have a briefing you kind of do?
Very simple, like, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to close my eyes. I'm going to invite your loved ones in spirit close. And whoever stepping forward, the strongest, I'm going to start with that. Please just answer me in yes, no, I'm not sure. I'm going to bring through the information and we're just going to let it flow. And that's all I say. And they go, oh, okay. And I go, please don't feed me information. Don't go looking for certain things. Just let the reading just do, let it run its course. And later we'll ask more deeper questions. Now, this is specifically for mediumship. You know, it'd be different if someone came for a psychic reading where they wanted to look at their career, then we'd get more specific from the beginning. But when working with loved ones in spirit, my job is just to get out of the way.
And you don't want them to give you any of that kind of feedback where you might say, well, look, I think your mother was quite athletic. And then they go into a whole story of her athletics.
Yeah, because if they just answer me yes or no, it just keeps me in the flow. But if they stop and interrupt me every time to tell me the story, it's almost like I start to lose that connection because they're taking over, if that makes sense. It's almost like you lose your train of thought or where you were at, right? It's just like when you're in a writing flow and you're typing and someone keeps talking to you. It's like, I can't, one or the other, can't do both. So,
can you tell us about the guy that came to you and you did the reading? And then at the end of it, he said, oh, this is the devil's work.
Oh, yeah. So that only happened, well, it's happened a few times, but that was the story that got into the book. Yeah, so this gentleman came to me and he said he came from referrals. And so he knew that it was a trusted source. And he came and sat down and he immediately started talking about his wife. And I said, can I stop you right there? I actually don't want to know any information about your wife. I want to bring you the information. And he said, oh, okay. So he was quiet and I just said, just answer me yes or no. And I gave him the reading and his wife was standing there and she came through immediately. And he cried from start to finish, the whole way through. And so I gave him my Kleenex box. And, you know, after the reading was finished, he just sat there for a bit crying. So I gave him a moment just to hold space. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, his face changed and his brow furrowed and he looked at me. And it was just like these vicious eyes looking back at me. And he said, so how does your husband sleep knowing you're doing the devil's work in the basement? And what? You know, I was completely shocked that he went there after something that was so beautiful that we had created together in this reading. And I wasn't going to let him have power over me. And I wasn't going to let him push me around in my own house. Like, come on. So I just said to him, you know, my husband and I sleep well knowing that I'm doing God's work in the basement, because that's true. If there was even one 100th doubt that what I was doing was not coming from love and a higher source, I wouldn't do it. And, you know, he fought with me a little bit that he had to go pay his penance now. And I was kind of like an addiction, like something like an itch he had to scratch. He just had to see. And that made me feel kind of gross, like kind of icky. But yeah, I couldn't get him out of my house fast enough after that. And I just kind of shut the door behind him and, you know, told Spirit, never again, don't ever, ever bring someone like that to me again. And I spoke to his wife in Spirit and she was kind of like, oh, sorry, you know, he was lovely. But I sometimes feel that people have such a hard time believing, even when they're experiencing it, that once their mind comes back and they start to realize how vulnerable they were, it's like they have to toughen up. And it was just such an odd experience. But why I placed that in the book is just the recognition that this work isn't all love and light and perfect. I mean, to some people, it would look like I have this really, really awesome life and I get to do this amazing stuff, which I do. But there also comes with repercussions where people will cut you out of their life because you're into mediumship, where people will try and attack you for what you do. And I'm so far from that world today and letting people in like that, that you have to set those boundaries right from the start. Otherwise, it could really crush you with just how much people divide themselves from you or try and make this work wrong because of a book, you know, the Bible, and it's saying that not to do it. And I just see it as that's just another way people have their power taken away from them, because mediumship, there should be nothing unnatural about communicating with loved ones and ancestors. They're with us all the time.
You had that experience with your friend throwing you out of bed, which was a physical thing. Have you ever had physical stuff happen while you're doing a reading?
Physical stuff. You know, things happen where I feel like I'm being poked or tapped on the shoulder or someone's touching my hair. When I'm doing mediumship on the platform, sometimes it feels like I'm literally being pushed out of my chair to stand up and start talking. Things happen where it's like, I'll look and I'll see this bubble in the sky that's kind of in front of me, and I'll kind of reach out and I can almost tangibly touch it. So one time there was this bubble that appeared before me and I leaned into it and it smelled like alcohol. So sometimes things happen when I'm giving a reading where energies come in that become more tangible that I can see, that represents something important in the reading. So like that bubble that smelled like alcohol, or I had another time where it smelled like perfume, but it's more than just a psychic scent. It's literally a physical energy bubble that appears in my room that I can see and has a scent to it. So things like that do happen. I guess that would be called more physical. I wouldn't say normal, but it does sporadically happen time to time.
So you went to Arthur Findlay College. So how was that? What was that experience like?
Well, I've been there quite a bit, probably about eight times, I believe, over the past 9-10 years. And each trip you go, it's quite transformative. And depending on where I'm at in my progression and my mediumship, the trip will offer something different to me. And funny enough, I was just there 3 weeks ago, so I just recently left there again. But that first time I went, I just remember walking into the building and just feeling like, wow, I'm home. I know this place. This was destiny. Like, I was sent here and this was part of my blueprint or life plan, because there's no way I could miss this. And I talk about that story in the book about my grandmother and the orange roses. Do you remember that one?
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah, it was my first day, the first time I'd ever been to the Arthur Findlay College. And I was doing a reading with a partner, and she was reading me, and she brought through my grandmother who had recently passed. And she brought through a bunch of evidence, so I knew it was her. And then she says, she's so proud of you for coming here. So much so that she wants to give you a bouquet of roses. Oh, wait, orange roses. And, you know, I thought that was cute. You know, oh, how sweet. My grandmother wants to give me orange roses. You know, she preferred yellow roses, but, you know, good enough. And I said thank you to the medium, and it was a lovely reading, but I didn't think anything of it. Well, the next morning, I was getting ready for classes, and it was about 8:30, and there was a knock on my door. And we all stay in rooms within this giant manor. So all the rooms are within the space. And I was on the second floor down a long hallway. And so I was thinking, I wonder who's, you know, knocking on my door. So I walk over there and open it. And there was this woman standing there with a bouquet of orange roses. And I remember thinking, like, is this really happening right now? And she says, hi, I'm late for the course. I'm from London and I was leaving work last night and I had this bouquet of orange roses sitting on my desk. And as I was walking out, I turned around and grabbed them because I realized I had to bring them to the college with me. And she said she had this sudden thought that she would take the orange roses with her, run up to the second floor of the manor and knock on a random door to the first person that answered them and give them this bouquet of orange roses. And that was me. And so I kept them in my room all week. And I told her and I told my partner who worked with me the day before about what had transpired. And it was just such a earth-shattering moment that not only did I feel guided, that my guides felt guided, but that my ancestors and even my grandmother was supporting me in this endeavor of studying and becoming a medium. Like, that just made it full circle for me.
What do they teach at the Arthur Findlay College? Is it all sorts of different bits and pieces? Or do they say, okay, you're a medium, or we're just going to show you medium stuff?
So it's a spiritualism school. And so it's the study of spiritualism. So that's healing, evidential mediumship, trance, and maybe a little bit of psychic work. So there's many courses. They're running every week, all year. And based on the tutor and the course and what they're teaching, they'll teach various things. Now, my first couple times, I was more interested in just learning mediumship and what it was and how to do it well and, you know, what to look for. And then the later years I've gone for more professional courses because I do this for a living. And practicing more platform mediumship and having this as my sole work and business. And they have different variations of courses from absolute beginner to all the way to professional and advanced.
So one thing you say in the book I thought was interesting is that you wondered if our loved ones in spirit stay in their religion long term when they cross over. So did you find out about that?
Some do, some don't. It's very unique to the person. And then sometimes I feel like the longer they're in spirit, maybe they become more open, but definitely in those first little bit, not so much. The story I referenced to is my husband Matthew's grandmother, who was a devout Catholic her entire life. And she had the priest come before she passed, and she really held her faith because it was something that worked for her. And I remember thinking, I'm like, is she going to carry this after she passes? Because it was really important to her that her children, her grandchildren, had a belief in Catholicism, that they practiced as Catholics, but a lot of them didn't. And I often wondered, I'm like, would she open her mind a bit on the other side? So when she passed, I remember just waiting for her to see if she would come, and she didn't. It was like very stoic. It's like, oh, okay, she's on the other side. I know she passed, but I'm not feeling her. So we went to her Catholic funeral, and she had it blessed. And, you know, we had the frankincense and the holy water. And then as we were burying her, so as they were lowering the casket, all of a sudden I felt this transference of energy move through, and I felt her. And she said to me, I was a Catholic then, and I'm a Catholic now. So it was almost like her stubbornness survived death. And she chose to be where she wanted to be, and where she, how she chooses to spend her afterlife was still as a Catholic. Now, I've had some readings where they've been gone 20 years, and that doesn't seem to be an issue anymore. But I also believe that we're continuously evolving on the other side. So maybe your opinions would change over time. But that was very important to her when she first passed.
That's what I've wondered about it, is if perhaps, if you're like a very strong Catholic, when you pass over, you go to a space where everybody's a very strong Catholic.
Yeah.
But then over time, you learn that that's not quite how it works.
Yes. And, you know, my grandmother on my dad's side, she was a Christian. And it was hard for her knowing that my dad didn't raise us as Christians. And she had fears that we were going to go to hell. And, you know, she loved us dearly, but there was always a bit of a guard to get too close to us. And I say that with love, and I believe it was because of her religion. But in the past couple years, I can't tell you how many times she has come through to say sorry about that. And it's like, I'm well past it. But she continuously just wants me to know that that was a bad choice to let her religion come between us or come between families, that that was not right. And so I believe in our evolution of the soul, you know, the barriers come down and love wins every single time. And even religion, you know, love is more important than keeping people away because of what they believe.
And I suppose, you know, then you talked about the fear of people going to hell, but I suppose hell doesn't exist.
Hell's in your mind. I mean, I've experienced more hell on this earth than you'd ever experience on the other side. Thing about the spirit world is it's pure love. You come here for an experience. And you make mistakes and you learn, you grow, but you take yourself with you. And there's no judging God in the sky, right? That God's within you. He's not outside of you. And so to say that there's a hell, that's just a state of mind, just like how heaven is a state of being, right? I can tap into that infinite source and feel heaven, or I can get really, you know, high on myself or caught up in myself, in addiction even, that is hell, but that's hell on earth. And in spirit, I believe there's different layers and maybe even levels, if you want to go there, about how we experience the afterlife, and we keep evolving and we experience even more connection, even more love. And so as we cross over, there's different aspects of what we see. But you're right, just like how the Catholics go with the Catholics, because it feels right, but they may outgrow that over time in their afterlife and go even higher. And so that's where I think maybe the term hell came from, is like if people had a horrible life here and had some horrible experiences, they'd go to the other side, but they wouldn't be as high up as the saints, right? It's because their experience and the density of their field and their energy they carried maybe wouldn't take them up that high. But then I also believe that that's why we come to Earth, is because we fast track and we want to be able to evolve our souls at rapid speed so we can be even in those higher states on the other side.
And do you feel that reincarnation is a part of that?
I do, but you know, everything's happening all at once and there's no such thing as time and space. So I even feel like even that is happening all right now, right?
Yeah, that's how I view it.
And so I believe each life we decide what it is we want to bring through, work with, deal with, or work on, and we bring that to Earth. But it's so individual on our journey, and that's why we can't judge each other of what life lessons or what they're here to learn. I mean, like for some people, it's career or relationship, and then you see with another, that's just no issue for them. So you can't help but wonder, it's like, oh, they didn't come here in this lifetime to look at that, right? Like I had friends that lost so many loved ones by the time they were 20. It was almost like, oh, okay, they came in this life to experience grief. That's very obvious for them, right? Well, another person, they're 50 and they haven't lost anybody they love. So you really got to look at that, of this individuality on our journey.
And do you ever have a reading where somebody comes through that the sitter doesn't want to hear from?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Usually it's the abusive father that was an alcoholic that beat the mother and the kids all the time. Those are the ones that are most forgiving. They want to come through so bad so they can let their little girl or their son know that they're sorry, because they see how much it affects them, how much it's holding them back, how that every relationship is broken. This happens occurringly because they see the rift and the discord that was created from their bond and the ripple effect, that they would want to make that effort to apologize, to start to make this amend so that they can transform their life on Earth. And oftentimes they don't want to hear from them. They don't want to waste their 1 hour reading on 15 minutes talking about dad, but I'll plant the seed. And sometimes if they come a second or third time, they'll start to understand what's really happening here. And the reason why they keep having these horrible relationships is because until you deal with this, that can't fall into place. And sometimes that's just a light bulb moment.
Sometimes I hear that mediums work with guides. It's almost like a nightclub bouncer is on the other side with a clipboard, and you're trying to connect with loved ones, and they show up with this bouncer with a clipboard, and he's like, yeah, okay, you can go through. Do you have a guide like that?
You know, every time I start to get ready, I'm aware of a presence of a female on my left side, and I call her my ministry guide because she appeared when I started doing ministry. And I know that she's vetting. Like, she's like, okay, you're here. This is what we're doing today. It's almost like she kind of gives me an overview of what's happening. But the second the reading starts, she disappears so that others can move forward in the experience of mediumship. But I know that she's always there, and I'm always just aware of her, because I believe when you walk this path, you develop a very strong relationship with your spirit team, and you have to trust them more than the people in front of you, because people in this life, they don't remember, they lie, you know, things happen where you can't always believe everything they said. But the spirit, when you can develop a stronger relationship with them, you know, you're safe and you're good, because you can trust that they'll bring the information that's needed in the sitting. And at the end of the day, a medium works for spirit, and they're here to be of service to the physical realm, but they're more loyal to the spirit world.
So if somebody wanted to be a medium, what would your advice be? Is it one of those things where if you're going to be a medium, you'll probably be in training for the rest of your life? There's always something new to learn.
Always. And even though I've been doing this 10 years and I went back to the Arthur Findlay College just 3 weeks ago, there was still things like, oh my God, I'm outdated. I got to get up to date now. Like, things are always progressing and innovative, and you have to stay on top of it. Otherwise you get stuck. And you do mediumship the way it used to be. And consciousness is moving so fast. And it, like I said, it's a living language. It's alive. So you have to catch it in this moment. And just like anybody who takes a skill seriously, you want to continue progressing in it and have feedback, have mentors, have people that can kind of overview you, catch things like bad habits. Like those are all very important to me. If I'm going to do this, I want to do it well, right? Because not every day is amazing. Sometimes you have days where you're like, oh God, that wasn't fun, you know? But it's those ones that you end up learning the most from.
And do you feel that just as mediums keep developing on this side, that the spirit world are working on trying to find better ways to communicate?
Absolutely. And right now it's all technology. They've totally blended with technology. I don't know why people say that they haven't and that this is the devil's work and all this stuff with technology. I'm seeing so much phenomena happen just through my phone. Like all of a sudden pictures will pop on the screen, or ads that I need to see will appear before me. Songs will just randomly start playing on my phone. Things like that happen to get my attention. And they're showing me that this is the easiest way to reach you at the moment. So you have your phone always with you in your pocket or in your purse or whatever. So let me give you signs and hints through this, right?
Yeah, I talked to a woman, she's written a book called WhatsApps from Heaven, where her deceased husband seemed to just contact her through WhatsApp.
Yeah, I had another client tell me that, where automated messages would just write her back, right? Where she would say like, hi, so-and-so, and then these automated messages from his phone would write her back. And she started to take that too as just him working with technology to reply to her. And some people would say that's very skeptical, but you can't help but feel that comfort from it, right?
So if people wanted to contact you, do you do sittings?
I do. You could go through my website, which is just nicolepowell.ca. I have online booking. Usually I book about 6-7 months in advance. And it's just whatever's available online that I have. And that's the best way to get in touch with me. And in the new year, I'll be moving down to 3 days a week for private sittings, because I'm teaching a lot more and doing a lot more group work just to make it more accessible.
Is it over Zoom and telephone and stuff?
So lots of Zoom, and then some in person if people are local. I don't like to do phone too much, because I prefer to see them just to kind of feel more connected. You know, sometimes people are a bit distracted on their phone. I just really want to make sure I have their undivided attention. And you know, over time with working with people, sometimes it's on email, sometimes it is phone, but majority of them, if you want to sit down sitting, it's either Zoom or in person.
The book's called The Power, A Call to Mediumship. People can get that on Amazon, can't they?
They can, Amazon worldwide.
Great. And thanks for coming on the podcast. It's been great.
Thank you so much, Simon. It's been wonderful.
So this week I was talking to Nicole Powell about her book, The Power, A Call to Mediumship. And if you want to hear the rest of this amazing interview, you can sign up to Patreon. When you sign up for $6 a month, you get an extended episode every week. And for $3 a month, you get an extended episode every month. The Patreon episodes are ad-free and are released 2 days before the free versions. You can become a patron by going to patreon.com/ourparanormalafterlife. Or click on the Patreon button on my homepage at pastliveshypnosis.co.uk. The links are in the show notes. And there is an Our Paranormal Afterlife Facebook group, and if you'd like to join, you'd be very welcome. And if you enjoy the podcast, please leave a review, and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening.